was a small cemetery. I've been inside when Rav Yonatan Shai said to me that he has particular mishpacha that are buried here. So I said, and he asked how he could find them. So there are no standing matzevot inside. What's interesting here is that basically the matzevot were strewn all over, and they have sort of like gathered them together and piled them up as almost like it's like a tombstone for a cemetery. It's not, but there's nothing left inside. But I'll tell you three facts about the cemetery. I'll let Yonatan Shai talk about his mishpacha. One is that I said this was a small cemetery. If we were to walk in, it's smaller than the cemetery right now. Right now, it is smaller than the cemetery that we visited this morning. But in this cemetery, there are 300,000 people who are buried. This is a cemetery that continued operating into the 19th century, even when the new cemetery that we saw today opened. But as the Jewish community largely moved from Prague into Warsaw, as it became more affluent, this became the poor man's cemetery. So paupers who didn't have money to pay for burial, they were buried in this cemetery, together with many, many people who were buried there for hundreds of years before. The most prominent, probably, being the man who I mentioned. We were standing outside of Berek Sonnenberg's kever. I mentioned that his father was a man named Shmuel Zvitkover, who was so prominent in Praga that, in fact, there's a neighborhood that to this day isn't officially, but people call it Shmuel Vizna, because it's named for him, for Shmuel Zvitkover. And I'll tell you a chassidish story about him. Shmuel Zvitkover. Oh, sure enough. Okay, there he is.
He has his name on the sign.
He wasn't exactly a chassid of the Kushnitzer Magid, but he was connected with him. The Kushnitzer Magid, he was something. Shmuel Zvitkover, maybe it's not nice to talk about the dead standing in front of not only their kever, but in front of a picture that shows him as a fine, upstanding Jew. But the story, as I heard it, was that he was someone who was very, very wealthy, who was very successful in business, as was his son, but there were questionable business practices and some questionable personal practices. And the Kushnitzer Magid, after trying to be makar of him and get him to do tshuva, and was unsuccessful, at some point, basically, up until then, he had allowed him to assist him in financially in various masim tovim that he did. He basically disconnected himself from him. But then there was one particular story that made him once again recognize that there was someone very special here, and that was, I've already mentioned, that Jews were involved in some of the Polish uprisings against the Russians for independence. Now, even though we don't have a good sense, unless we pull out our compasses and figure out which way Mizrach is, but Praga is to the east. When the Russians come, they first come to Praga before they cross the river into Warsaw, which is why we said during World War II they came to the center and waited for Warsaw to be destroyed before going in. In 1795, the Poles rose up against the Russians, and the Jews joined the Poles in a fight for independence. And when the Russians came and beat the Poles and their Jewish allies, they began to, take people captive and kill people. And Shmuel, he was a very, very successful person. He had like a private army. He was protected, but many of the other Jews were being killed or taken prisoner. So basically, he took out two barrels of coins, a barrel of gold coins and a barrel of silver coins. And he sent word among the Russian troops that anyone who brought a live Jew to him would get a gold coin, and anyone who brought a dead Jew to him would get a silver coin. In other words, He wanted the Russians to change their attitude. Why would I take the person captive when I could sell him to Shmuel Zbitkover and get my gold coin? Right? Why should I let this Jewish person lie in the street and trample with my horse after he's dead already? I can bring him to Shmuel Zbitkover and get a silver coin. And Shmuel, of course, took care of, he both saved many, many lives, hundreds of lives, and he also brought people to Kevin Yisrael who otherwise just would have been abandoned. And when the Kushitzer Magid heard the story, he said, you know, there's something there. A short time after the story, Shmuel Zbitkover passes away. And he passes away on the Shabbos morning. The Kushitzer Magid is davening for the Amud on Shabbos morning. And all of a sudden, the Tzibur sees that something went on. You know, he stops all of a sudden. And he starts singing. We talked about Nigunim today. He starts singing a brand new Nigun for Kel Adon. And afterwards, people said, what happened? He said, you know, I saw that B'Shamayim Shmuel Zbitkover was, you know, brought to the Olam HaEmes, and there were many, many negative things being said about him because of the way he led his life. But, of course, it was one very, very good thing that he did, and I, through this new niggun I sang, was able to push aside the negative reports, and with that, bring him into Gan Eden. So there's a story about Shmuel Zbitkover, and this was the Beit HaKvarot that he was miyaseid. He started this. One last thing I'll say about this is that I don't know what the niggun was. Sorry. You know, sometimes you just tell the story about the niggun, and it's like singing the niggun. The one thing. After we didn't get there today, you'll have to remember this for next week when we get to the ghetto area. The ghetto area, after the ghetto uprising, was totally destroyed. Totally destroyed. And if you remember, I mean, we can relate to this. Oh, some of us can relate to it. I forget how young you guys are. You know, after 9/11, the first thing that the city of New York needed to do before anything else was it took them months just to clean out, to dig through and clean out the wreckage that was there. So those were just two very, very, very tall buildings. Here, an entire neighborhood had been totally destroyed, and it took the poles, it took them some time to clear that area in order to rebuild it. When they first cleared the area, they found many, many human remains from ghetto fighters who had been killed in the ghetto. Those ghetto fighters were brought here and were buried in this cemetery, which today, you know, the cemetery that there are people buried there, not in the traditional sense of tombstones. So they were added to the hundreds of thousands of people who were buried here and joined them in an eternal rest. So that's a general thing. Now we can hear something about the specific mishpacha.
Okay. I have, Baruch Hashem, a living great aunt who told me most of this.
I'll just say that you know that Yonatan Shai came with me when he was a Talmud in Yeshivat HaRetzion. The very first year I did Hadracha for Yeshivat HaRetzion, and we came to Warsaw, and he said, can't we go to the other cemetery?
Because I was told I had relatives buried here. And we had a tour guide named, our Polish guide, his name was Yankel, and he told me, visiting that other cemetery, he said, it's a very dangerous place, it's a drug zone, a gang zone. He said, you won't get to do much cemetery watching, you'll be busy ducking and running for your lives. So
that was 11, 12 years ago. Obviously, it's quite a
Baruch Hashem, we're standing here right now without that.
Ariel says it still is something of a... He's keeping us safe.
No, I said we can't go in because it's forbidden on there.
No. How about the neighborhood? How about the...
The neighborhood of the Praga. Yes. It's
still not
nice
safe.
Place.
Not a nice place.
It's not safe, the place.
Okay.
Okay.
So thanks for being here. So she told me... She told me that, let's start with, my grandfather made it to America. He was born about 1917, and he made it to America as a little kid. So his parents and family had already moved to America. They already experienced very severe anti-Semitism. This is before the Nazis took control and took over. My great-grandfather, his family, they were he was a leather worker and weren't allowed to own a business. So every time an officer came and wanted to close his business, he had to bribe them with a saddle or a belt or whatever else. And this wasn't a great situation. My grandfather told the family that when he came back and visited and he remembered the park he wasn't allowed to play in as a Jew. And, you know, again, this is we're talking 1920s. This is pre-1939, 1940. But so his family specifically came, but he had lots of aunts and uncles here. First, already in 1895, there was my great-great-grandfather was buried here. His name Dov Berry, who my father is named after. And my great-great-grandmother, Hudis Miller, she died about 1917, right before my grandfather was born. So both of their parents are here, and my grandfather had a younger brother who died of malnutrition, and he apparently they think is buried somewhere here too, a little kid.
Malnutrition before the war.
Before the war.
In other words, you have to get a sense of what life was like.
What life was like. It was they couldn't own a business. You couldn't make money, so it was hard to feed your family. So his grandparents and on both sides are buried here. So my grandfather's uncles, aunts, uncles, cousins, so they lived on a street in Warsaw. It was called, they lived 63 Pavia Gas. Gas means street, 63 Pavia Street. So when my grandfather visited here, he said they rebuilt a street and called it Pavia Street, but it's not in the same spot. They rebuilt a neighborhood somewhere else. But they have a postcard dated February 2nd, 1940, saying his uncle Yidol or Yehuda was well, and that was my great grandfather's brother, and that was the last he heard. So my great aunt said she went to Yad Vashem, and they have archives, and she asked about the people who lived at 63 Pavia Gas, and they said that when they were destroying the Warsaw Ghetto, they burnt down the building with everybody in it. So that was why the last we heard of them was that postcard.
Oh, by the way, that they might be in here too.
You're saying even though they were from the ghetto?
Was, I'm telling you, the ghetto, everything, all the bodies they found in the ghetto ultimately were brought here.
Were brought here. Oh, so they could be here too. They say a story of the Panovich Rav. He visited Rome. He went on many fundraising trips to raise money for his yeshiva. And when he came, even though it was late at night, he immediately wanted to go to the Arch of Titus. So, you know, his host said, you know, it's dark, you know, let's go in the morning. He said, no, I have to go now. And he got to the arch, and he starts calling out, Titus, we're here, where are you? That was his nechama, that the Romans are gone, Jews remain. So maybe as a nechama to the relatives of mine buried here. They have great-great-grandkids, great-great-grandnephews, great-great-nephews, I guess, living in Eretz Yisrael from Jews. May that be a nechama for them.